Ljubljana, Bratislava, Amsterdam, Warsaw, Bucharest. 2-1. Hello and a very warm welcome. I'm Cristina Tiberian. Muslims the world over have entered the holy month of Ramadan. This week, Network Europe looks at some of the issues surrounding the Muslim community in Europe. Coming up on the show, Germany holds a historic meeting between government officials and Muslim leaders. Ramadan festivities unite the residents of a Paris suburb. And in Turkey, Alevi Muslims celebrate Ramadan with a difference. In Germany, government officials and representatives of Muslim organizations have met for the first time in an attempt to initiate a dialogue between the state and Muslims living in the country. The government hopes the talks will continue for at least 2 years and will result in a political pact with the Muslim community. Deutsche Welle's Hardy Graupner reports from the Islam Conference in Berlin.
Emerging from nearly 3 hours of talks in Berlin's Charlottenburg Palace, German Interior Minister Wolfgang Schäuble said the discussion with Muslim representatives had been constructive, albeit not always harmonious. He promised Muslim leaders that measures would be taken to counter any attempts in German society to place a general suspicion on Islamists when analysing and assessing terrorist threats. Schäuble said the overwhelming majority of Muslims in this country are peace-loving and non-violent citizens. But he also made it clear that many Muslims' reluctance to integrate fully into society had to be overcome. In our talks, we have to be clear about the fact that Muslims have become an integral part of German society, he says. What it means for the Muslims living here is that they are called upon to accept and respect our values, including equality between men and women. They must also accept the strict separation between the state and religion. Among other things, this means that we cannot tolerate any attempts to make the Sharia have an impact on any legal order here. That's simply out of the question. The General Secretary of the Central Council of Muslims in Germany, Ayman Maziek, is convinced that the first conference has successfully paved the way for a dialogue based on mutual trust and understanding. First of all, we welcome the German government's resolve to talk with us directly, rather than just talking about us, as used to be the case in previous decades, he says. Muslim life has been developing here for a long time now, and the fact can no longer be ignored that millions of us are at home in Germany. This is why improved communication is so vital in the future. The next round of talks are intended to deal with more specific issues, such as Islam classes in German school and the German language, providing more apprenticeships to young Muslims, and ensuring that the divided Muslim communities can in future speak with one voice. Hardy Graupner, Deutsche Welle Radio, Berlin.
Now, as you've just heard, the official line after the Islam conference was quite positive. But for a more in-depth look at the event, I turned to Islam expert Dr. Frank Peter. I first asked him how significant the meeting was for Germany.
The fact that the government finally took the step to speak directly with representatives of Muslim organizations and other personalities with an Islamic background is in itself significant, and this can be seen as a positive step. And in the other respects, we simply have to wait to see what actually comes out.
But in the lead up to this meeting, there was controversy over the 15 Muslim representatives that were invited to attend. How representative were, in fact, the group of Muslims?
I think the controversy is more about the presence of writers, intellectuals, businessmen, who have a very weak link to Muslim religious life or Muslim communities in Germany. And it's more the Islamic organizations who are contesting now the right of these persons to attend the conference.
But is that complaint justified?
The question really is, what is the aim of this conference? And if you say it is the Islam conference aims to organize and to facilitate Muslim religious practice in Germany, the question is to ask why these people are attending the conference is legitimate. Why is a writer of Turkish background who is not related in any way to mosque associations, who is not a practicing Muslim, attending this conference? That's a legitimate question, definitely. But since this conference is not only about religious practice, mosques, the construction of mosques, or similar questions, but about the immigration, integration of people from Islamic background, the presence of these people makes sense.
So you believe that there was a representative group, indeed, for the Muslim population attending?
People today in Germany, as in most other European countries, systematically equate Muslim with immigrant. People, immigrants from Islamic countries, are automatically seen as Muslim. So all major newspaper reports today stated that there are 3.5 million Muslims living in Germany. Although no one knows how many people actually see themselves as Muslim, go to mosque and so forth. So the result is that any kind of social problems or economic problems related to these immigrant population are today seen as partly Islamic problems too. And I think it is questionable to assume that these social economic problems are really related to Islam. And it is also questionable whether writers of Turkish Islamic background have so much to say about these problems, right? So I think ultimately you will hear people criticizing this Islam conference and the whole logic which is behind it. And we have had similar experience in France, in Britain, in other countries.
Yes, and I was going to suggest that we look at the broader picture at other European governments, such as France, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
France has already organized a National Islamic Council. How successful is the French Council?
It's really difficult to gauge the accomplishments of the Council. Inside the Council, there have and there continue to be very strong rivalries between different Islamic groups. So the real work, the functioning of the Council has been severely obstructed by these interfactional fights inside the Council. It's highly politicized, and the Minister of the Interior is constantly intervening into the Council. So the real accomplishments, concrete accomplishments, there are very little so far. It certainly has facilitated in some cases the standing of representatives from Muslim groups in French cities. It is easier for these groups today to interact, for example, with the municipality. It gives them a different legitimacy.
That was Islam expert Dr. Frank Peter discussing pros and cons of Islamic councils in European countries. And we're moving over to France now, which is home to Europe's largest Muslim population, estimated at between 5 and 6 million people. The majority live in the French capital, Paris, and there Ramadan makes a real difference. The holy month is a joyous time of fellowship, worship and reflection. In multicultural neighbourhoods, it's also an opportunity for people with different religious backgrounds to mix. Radio France International's Nick Champeau went down to Belleville in the northeast of Paris to sample the spirit of Ramadan.
Belleville gets a new lease of life during the holy month of Ramadan. It's packed with stands selling dates, olives, pyramids of honey, almond and pistachio pastries, and other oriental delicacies. Ali is from Tunisia. He turns his restaurant into a bakery during Ramadan. He says the holy month is for everybody to enjoy.
Here in Belleville, we have quite a mix of people. I have customers who are Jewish, Catholic and Muslim. They all come here to buy my pastries. We live together. We are against the war and tension. We live in France. We're all the same.
It's true that multicultural Belleville has a real neighborhood feel, at first glance at least. I decided to cross the street to the Delice de Kifoli restaurant to double check. That's where I met Arlette. She was eating fish and salad with her friends in the middle of the afternoon. In other words, she wasn't fasting. Arlette is a Jewish woman from Tunisia. She arrived in Belleville 40 years ago.
It's nice. It's always nice. The atmosphere's good. We're brothers and sisters. And we wish everybody a happy holiday, whether they're French, Jewish or Arab. Look, see how nice it is. People are coming out to buy food for tonight. They're waiting for the moon. And when it finally appears, they start eating. It's nice.
Arlette is right. The shops get busier and busier as sunset approaches. Mohammed's stand is one of the most popular.
So, we have all the ingredients necessary to prepare soup. We have sweets and pastries with dry fruit. Early in the morning, it's best to drink fermented milk and dates, and in the evening, when we break the fast, it's best to drink a glass of hot milk, wait for 15 minutes, and then start eating soup and a nice meal. That's it.
I stopped in front of the Tawhid bookshop on my way to the mosque and had a chat with 50-year-old Mohammed from Tunisia and his 9-year-old daughter. He was clearly moved when I asked him about Ramadan in the Belleville neighborhood.
We left our country a long time ago, and it's true that walking through Belleville is like going back to our roots. There are mosques. It's important because we mustn't forget our culture and our religion, especially now that the Pope is defying us. Many politicians are defying us, so it's important that we go back to our roots.
Leaving Mohammed, I walked past the Café Bleu bar and couldn't resist pausing for a break on the sunny terrace when I heard its smooth, inviting Caribbean music. Frank is the new owner of the Café Bleu. He's from the Caribbean and he is not Muslim.
We serve hot drinks at night. Normally we don't, but there are many Muslims who stop by and it would be a shame not to serve them coffee or tea. We are also allowed to stay open all night. We're not a Muslim cafe, but since we're at the heart of the neighborhood, we're entitled to the special Ramadan license, which is good for our non-Muslim customers. And as I said, we have moderate Muslims coming in and we talk about all sorts of things together. That's what neighborhood life is all about, meeting different people and mixing all the different cultures peacefully.
After 3 hours in Belleville, I thought it was time to head home. I was quite hungry and invited friends around for tea. I didn't have to buy anything because I had been offered pastries, dates and olives in every single shop I visited. And that says a lot about the Ramadan spirit in Belleville. Paris, Nick Champeau, RFI.
Now, there are significantly less Muslims in Sweden than in France, but that doesn't mean the 300,000-strong community isn't facing its own issues of integration. Sweden's official policy is multiculturalism, but just what that means is a source of constant debate. One product of Sweden's search for its own brand of multiculturalism is Gringo magazine, which turns prejudice on its head by using the language of the suburbs where most of Sweden's immigrant population lives. Azaria Kiros from Radio Sweden caught up with Marian Kahn, managing editor of the magazine, who draws on her own Turkish-Swedish background to discuss integration and discrimination in Swedish society.
We write about the suburbs and the people who live in the suburbs. And we write in a loving, positive way. If we look at the things that other newspapers or magazines write, they write about suburbs and the people in the suburbs in a quite negative way, and we would like to change that picture with our things that we write about, and we write it in a positive way.
In what particular way do they write negatively when you say other mass media reflect the situation in the suburbs in a negative way?
Personally, I think they write in two different ways. First, they are exotifying the suburbs and the people who live there. It's like, oh, they do this like oriental food and they have this oriental music, exotic music, and their clothes are like different. And we have that picture. And then we have the negative picture where the person who lives in the suburb, he or she is criminal, he or she is poor, he or she has been living a hard life. And that's not the whole picture. That's not the whole reality.
What is the reality?
The reality is what you read in Gringo. It's much more. We have Swedish people who live in the suburbs, but when we read about suburbs in other magazines, we just see the blackheads, as we call them. The reality is that a lot of things happen in the suburbs, a lot of positive things, but we never read about them. Teenagers and young people who activate themselves in good ways. And we don't read about these people in the majority media here in Sweden.
And what do you think is the reason behind this?
I think it's a question about knowledge. I think it's a lack of diversity at the newspapers here in Sweden. And you have to have a mix of different people in different ages, men and women, heterosexuals, homosexuals, a multicultural magazine. And if you have those people at your magazine, you can write about every issue in the community in a good way. It's like we say, Gringo is the most Swedish magazine in Sweden. Because if you look at the people who work here, we are all different. We are young, but we are all different from different places of Sweden, from different places in Stockholm, who live at different places. We have ethnic Swedes. And I think since we are such a mixture, we have the possibility to write about questions in many ways.
Since you want to portray a positive picture of the suburbs, what is the risk that you might present a less critical assessment or judgment of the situation in the suburbs?
Absolutely not. We are like very critical to ourselves, and we know that we have some things that we have to work with, like since we write about the suburbs, we write a lot about blackheads, as we call them in Sweden, svartskallar, people with black hair who don't look like ethnic Swedes. And since we write about the suburbs, we say that we are a magazine for the suburbs and people who live there, and we only write about blackheads. We give this picture that there are only blackheads living in the suburbs. We are very well aware of that, so we're trying to change that picture.
That was Radio Sweden's Azaria Kiros talking there with Miriam Khan, the managing director of Gringo magazine. Although most of the debate around integration and tolerance focuses on the conflicts between mainly Christian Europe and its Muslim immigrants, conflicts can also arise within Muslim communities themselves. This is the experience of the Alevis in Turkey. The Alevi are a sect of Islam and are very different from the mainstream Islamic faith. Along with not fasting during Ramadan, they also don't believe in the Hajj, and men and women pray together. It is estimated that up to a third of Turkey's population are followers of Alevi. But as Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, such differences in the interpretation of Islam, especially during the time of Ramadan, can lead to tensions.
The silence of the dead of night across Turkey is broken by the sound of the davulcu, or the drum man. As they have done for centuries, during the month of Ramadan, men like him wake people every morning for sahur, the meal taken by fasters before daybreak. But members of the Islamic Alevi sect won't be eating sahur. Alevis are followers of Ali, the son-in-law of the Prophet Muhammad. Unlike the majority of Muslims, they don't fast during Ramadan, go on the pilgrimage to Muhammad's birthplace in Mecca, and men and women are allowed to pray together. But followers of such a radically different interpretation of Islam do face problems. Hatice Kusher is an Alevi. She's collecting her son from school. She says Alevis frequently face pressure to assimilate with the majority Sunni Muslims, especially during Ramadan. That pressure, Hatice says, is especially felt by her son.
Asimile olduğunu fark ettim. Daha doğrusu kendimden biliyorum.
At school, his teacher is imposing other religious beliefs on him. For example, fasting is an issue. My son comes to me and tells me his religion teacher tells him he has to fast and that only filthy infidels don't observe Ramadan. Every week he faces 3 hours of indoctrination. When my son answers, "This is not my faith," the teacher says, "What kind of Muslim are you?" Another child I know was even beaten by his teacher for refusing to fast.
Hatice herself says as a child her parents insisted she fasted to avoid confrontation with Sunnis. Even today many Alevis fast for the same reason. Professor Cihan of Istanbul's Bosphorus University has been studying relations between Alevis and Sunnis in Turkey. He says that Ramadan can be a tense time between the two Muslim sects.
For example, in Istanbul there are a lot of mixed neighborhoods and mixed districts. And in these places there is a lot of tension. The most basic thing is they don't go by the basic tenets of Orthodox Islam, like praying, fasting in Ramadan, they fast in another during another month. But there are also more dirty gossip, like Sunni people gossip, for example, that Alevi people, they engage in incestuous relations during their religious ceremonies.
The Üsküdar Mosque in central Istanbul is packed with worshippers. During Ramadan, religious feeling is especially high in Turkey. Many people who don't pray at other times of the year attend mosques during the holy month. Speaking to people here, many voice deep suspicion, if not prejudice, against Alevis. This man's view is not unusual.
To be honest, they don't fit with us. I can't lie about it. Their religious beliefs are not proper. They don't fast. They have funny ideas. And they're not real Muslims. Don't get me wrong, I'm not prejudiced. Some of my friends are Alevi, but I would never let my daughter marry one.
At an Alevi religious ceremony, women and men pray side by side, using music and dance to worship. The ceremony is in a cemevi. Alevi don't worship in mosques because the founder of their faith, Ali, was murdered in one. But for all the differences with mainstream Islam, Alevis here are clear they are Muslims. This woman's view is typical.
There is no difference between Islam and Alevi, which is a sect of Islam. We are all Muslims. That's what we know and what we learned. Some people interpret it differently, but that doesn't make them any less a Muslim. There is a lot of ignorance and lies said about Alevis in Turkey, but I am proud to be an Alevi.
Over the centuries, the Alevis have carried out their religious practices in hiding, fearful of a violent retribution by mainstream Muslims. In 1994, a hotel full of Alevis attending a festival was burned to the ground by radical Islamics, and 34 people were killed. Despite this, the Alevis are becoming more assertive about their right to religious freedom, and many are now turning to the European Court of Human Rights to seek redress. The hope is that Turkey can live peacefully with its religious diversity. Dorian Jones, Deutsche Welle Radio, Istanbul.
Before we say goodbye, here is this week's Network Europe quiz.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Since we've been talking about Ramadan, this holiday falls in the ninth month of the Islamic calendar. Our question is, what is the name of this calendar? Send us your answers to contact@networkeurope.org. We'd love to hear from you, and of course you can always visit our website at networkeurope.org. Network Europe receives funding from the European Union and is a partnership of Radio France International, Radio Sweden, Radio Polonia, Radio Netherlands, Radio Romania International, Slovak Radio, Radio Prague, Radio Slovenia International, Radio Ukraine and Deutsche Welle. On behalf of our pan-European team, I am Cristina Tiberian, leaving you with the music of Algerian-born Jamel Laroussi, who now lives in Cologne, Germany. This is his song, Étoile Filante. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
À chaque fois que je pense à elle, la plaie revit et ça fait mal. Tout à coup c'était le soleil, sans abri tout devient fatal. Oh mon Dieu, comme elle était belle, en la voyant tout devenait pâle. Étoile filante dans mon sommeil, je trouvais dans mes nuits une rivale. Moi ya Gilali, moi ya Gilali d'Awil Hal. Moi ya Gilali d'Awil Hal. Moi ya Lali, moi ya Lali Yali Yali. Moi ya Gilali d'Awil Hal. Moi ya Lali, moi ya Lali Yali Yali. Moi ya Gilali d'Awil Hal. Moi ya Lali.